This is CBS Eye on the World. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here. I'm John Bastrop. We're going Starship Test Number 9. Bob, I missed this entirely. I was working, so were you probably. However, what I hear is that there was a fire. Something they've seen before or something new?
What you hear is almost certainly wrong. Most of the mainstream press is calling this very negatively and stupid way, as they always do. It exploded. It blew up. Things didn't work. That's all not true. This is a test engineering flight of a prototype, so it's expected things will go wrong. And things did go wrong, but they went wrong in, once again, a very different way than they had on the previous two flights, and in some ways less disastrously. And yes, I was working, John, but my work is watching this, so I have more fun than you. So during the ninth flight, several things. One, the Super Heavy booster on Starship Super Heavy. This was a second flight for it. And in fact, one of its Raptor engines, it has 33 at its base, was actually flying for the third time. Now, they did not plan to try to catch it this time. What they decided to do, since they were reusing a booster, they were going to instead test the engineering limits of the booster upon reentry. For a second that you do a normal flight and something is not quite right and the booster's coming back in a way that it shouldn't. They want to test how far they can push those limits. And they did push. And they did push those limits, probably more than they should have, because it was going really well, but when it came close to the water, in the Gulf of Mexico, where it was supposed to soft splash down, they fired the landing engines, and then something went kablooey, went wrong. We don't know what exactly. I'm not going to say it exploded, but it definitely failed at that moment in time. They lost telemetry. They obviously had pushed it hard, and so when the engines fired, they had a problem because something had probably gone wrong with them in the way back. But that's all right. They were testing the limits. They didn't have an idea what those limits are. Meanwhile, Starship, after stage separation, it worked great. Its engines fired for the full time. They stopped firing. It was in its low orbit as planned. Sometime during that orbital flight, though, leaks began to develop in the fuel system, and they were having trouble controlling it. They tried to do a deployment of dummy Starlink satellites, but the payload door would not open properly. And the leaks apparently prevented them from, after a while, using the attitude control system. So basically the thing started to spin out of control. So they could not also do an engine relight of a Raptor engine as planned. And in the return to Earth, it returned over the Indian Ocean as designed. The orbit is low enough that the atmosphere pulls it down before it's completed an orbit, pulls it down over the Indian Ocean. So it did that, but it didn't do it in a controlled manner. So even though they were getting, I'm sure, data on their thermal protection system, they were not getting the data they wanted, obviously. In a sense, this flight produced a limited amount of additional data in the orbit phase, not much more than the previous two flights, and that's disturbing. Elon Musk had originally going to make a long public speech to his employees and the public about the future of Starship Super Heavy and Mars and what he wants to do. He originally was going to do this before the flight. I think his own engineers told him, look, everybody's focused on the flight. Why don't you wait till afterwards? So he rescheduled it to after the flight. And then he postponed it. And I think he postponed it because he wants to sit down with people and find out exactly what went wrong here and make plans for the future. And we'll have to wait and see. This is an engineering test program. This is the way things go. We should expect the next flight relatively quick. They've got prototypes waiting in the wings, and they, I think, are going to want to fly relatively fast.
Was this the same Starship as 8 and 7, or are they upgrading?
A 7 and 8 were both what they called version 2 of Starship. This was also version 2, but version 2 that has been reworked to try to handle the problems on the last two flights. They're going to have to do some more work on it.
Is there a version 3? I mean, is this...
There are versions 3, 4, 5. Remember, it's an iterative process. Even version 7 might not be the final version. It's, as they go, they're going to keep upgrading. Right now, they're working on version 2, and they're going to keep upgrading that until they get it right.
I saw a video of the cargo bay where they had the dummy satellites to be deployed. And when there's a manned version, is that where the crew quarters would be and what I was looking
at? That's the cargo bay. It's gigantic. They can they can build whatever they want in it. For example, the proposed commercial space station Starlab is going to be launched in that cargo bay hole and then released hole. They could reshape the interior to be a space station itself. They could put hundreds of Starlink satellites in there. It's gigantic. They have a lot of options what they can do with that payload bay.
So what we're looking at here is housing for whatever they put in there, manned or unmanned.
Yeah, think of the shuttle cargo bay. You know, the cargo bay doors would open and they'd have lots of things inside. This is much bigger and more has more flexibility in the future. It just has to be, they got to get it developed. They're working on it.
Was there any difficulty with pieces falling into the Caribbean, what they complained
about? No. Everything worked fine. Unlike the previous two missions, it got into orbit. It was operating in orbit, and it came down where it was supposed to in the Indian Ocean, though it wasn't a controlled return. And so nothing, no damage over the Caribbean at all.
I'm just looking for the usual lawfare excuses. You understand?
Yeah, I do understand, John. And trust me, they're going to still come up with things along the way. Okay. The way this mission has been reported by mainstream press has been, as usual, very disappointing. They're allowing their anti-Muslim narrative, idiotic narrative, to distort how they do this. ABC even tried to claim that all these Starship flights were failed missions to Mars. That's absolutely ridiculous, and it's just shameful reporting.
That's ambitious, though. All right, let's move to Dragon. That is the cargo vessel.
This is an example of how ordinary and routine SpaceX manages. They had a cargo Dragon launched in late April. It was up for a few months. This past weekend, it came back down to Earth, landed, slashed down off the coast of California, was recovered. It brought back almost 3 tons of supplies and experiments. And did anyone really report it? I had a link. Of course, I posted it on Behind the Black, but it was a very side. Oh, yeah, by the way, this happened. SpaceX makes things routine. Starship Super Heavy isn't routine yet, but it's going to eventually be this way. I'm sure of it.
The Senate is scheduling a vote for Jared Isaacman, who is nominated to be the NASA administrator. He came out of committee. This looks straightforward, or is there some partisan noise?
I'm sure there's always partisan noise, John, but the Senate has scheduled a vote to vote on his nomination for NASA administrator for early June when they come back from recess. He has been meeting with a lot of senators who are not on the Senate Commerce Committee that approved him. And apparently they're ready to make the vote. I expect him to pass without much problem. What will happen next, we'll have to see. He's in some ways an unknown at this point. He is a commercial guy, a private businessman who's flown in space, but we don't really know how he's going to approach the budget and other things once he gets
out. Does he still want to do the Hubble mission?
Well, he wanted to do that for his own private flight, but he's suspended his whole space program now that he's become NASA administrator. Whether he will talk to people at NASA and at the Space Telescope Institute about doing that mission is likely. He will probably talk about it with them because Hubble only works with one gyro right now, and it really could use a repair mission.
And it's straightforward. He's the boss, so let's see if he gets to it. All right. Wish him well in the vote. We go to Axiom, private space. What's up?
Yes, this is private space. Axiom is one of the four companies or consortium that's trying to build space, the commercial space stations. It's also flown 3 tourist missions to ISS using Dragon capsules. It's got a 4th planned in just about a week and a half. And that flight has got a Hungarian, a Polish, and an Indian astronaut as the passengers. 3 different nations have signed deals with Axiom. Well, this week, Axiom continues to garner business from other nations. It signed deals with both Egypt and the Czech Republic. With Egypt, they're going to work together to do various space-related research on Axiom facilities in space down the road. It's a little vague what that will be. With Czech Republic, it was more clear. They have an 11 intent to fly one of Czech's own astronauts on a future Axiom manned flight. That could be like the tourist flights, the short-term ISS flights, or it could be a long-term mission on the station once it starts getting launched and used. It does indicate to me, though, that there is definitely a demand for our commercial space stations in the international market. Axiom's grabbing it and making money on it. The other company, the other consortiums should do the same.
Have you got the drawing of Axiom Space Station? I don't remember.
It's on my. If people go to Behind the Black and go to the search box and do a search for Axiom, let's say Space Station, you'll come up with a graphic of what how they plan to do it. They're going to start adding modules to ISS initially, and once they get enough modules attached, they'll be able to separate from ISS and fly independently. That's their plan.
Axiom and Orbital Tug Startups Impulse Space. Remind what an orbital tug does, Bob.
All right, so, you know, once you get a satellite into orbit, you got to get it to the into space in orbit. You sometimes want to get it moved to its specific required orbit. And sometimes a lot of small sats are launched as secondary payloads, and they don't get to their right orbit during the launch. Well, orbital tug companies are providing this cottage industry service, and there's a lot of them now. Impulse Space is one of the newer ones. It was founded by Tom Mueller, who was one of the guys who helped build the Falcon 9 for SpaceX. This is a company that builds engines, but it also wants to become an orbital tug company. It's got a smaller and a bigger tugs. It has now signed a contract with the satellite company SES, one of the major satellite companies, longtime satellite company based in Luxembourg. SES, you might remember, John, was the first company to sign with SpaceX to do a launch using a reused Falcon 9. They were the first to take that gamble. They're willing to do those kind of things. Well, they probably worked with Tom Mueller when they were doing that with Falcon 9, and so they have confidence in him, so they've signed a deal to put up satellites, their SES big satellites, using this orbital tug to get it from low Earth orbit to geosynchronous orbit. And this is just, once again, there's business to be made here, and Impulse Space is trying to get it.
Dawn Aerospace, more private, but this is suborbital space plane. Do you have a picture of that, Bob?
Yeah, once again, you got to do a search on Behind the Black for its prototype model, which is only a very large, looks like a very large model. It's got a crowd of the people around it. They've done test flights with this small prototype in low altitude supersonic flights. They are now building a larger version called Aurora. It's suborbital. They originally were touting this as an orbital space plane, but they've shifted, and now they're focusing on suborbital work, and they're marketing it for hypersonic testing. There's a lot of companies doing hypersonic testing and are trying to get military business here. You've got Stratolaunch, you've got Varda, you've got Rocket Lab, and now Dawn Aerospace is trying to get that business as well. Whether they will eventually scale up to be orbital, it depends on how much money they make. But essentially, they're building the equivalent of an X-15. It'll be able to get into space on a suborbital flight and then come back, land, as well as take off from a runway. That'll be in advance of the X-15.
And, Bob, where's the market for that, given that you can do this in a balloon?
No, you can't do this stuff in a balloon. This is high-speed flights. That's why they're marketing themselves for hypersonic testing. Coming back from space, they can move very fast, and therefore you can test a variety of hypersonic equipment. What they're marketing right now. Obviously, if they get up into a space with some microgravity, even on a suborbital flight, they will therefore allow for some research in that respect as well.
Oh, but it's not for tourists. It's not for tourists.
No, they're not planning for tourists. No, this is all research.
I saw the word.
The Aurora that they're going to build is not going to be big enough, I think, for people to be on it.
I saw the word suborbital, and I just assumed that it was tourism because that's something else. All right. Pentagon is unhappy with ULA. What is ULA?
ULA is one of the rocket companies that's existed for the longest. It's actually a partnership of Boeing and Lockheed Martin. They had the Atlas V rocket and the Delta family of rockets. They're retiring those. They've retired the Deltas, and the Atlas V will be retired eventually. They built a new rocket called the Vulcan. The Vulcan's been approved by the military to launch its military classified satellites, but Vulcan has been very slow to get going. It was supposed to start launching in 20. Delays of Blue Origin's BE-4 engine caused a 5-year delay. They finally did their first two launches last year, but they have not yet launched again, and several launches for the military were delayed, and a Pentagon official blasted ULA in written testimony to Congress about these delays. They're really very unhappy about how slow this is going. It does appear, though, that this indicates an opportunity, once again, for new startups, because ULA is not producing things. It's not moving fast enough. Blue Origin is not moving fast enough. SpaceX is, therefore, the Pentagon's only launch provider right now that they can depend on. So there's room for other companies to move in and get this business, and that's the real story here.
NASA and the Artemis Accords. Now, what could go wrong with that, Bob? What's happened?
Arms accords were conceived by the Trump administration to get around the restrictions on free enterprise, private property, and investment in space. Outer Space Treaty outlaws establishing outlaws in space. You cannot have private property in space because it outlaws it. And so they created the Artemis Accords, which would be bilateral agreements between the U.S. and another country, pushing the idea of private enterprise in space and private property, among other things. That was the Trump administration interpretation. That was the whole purpose of this alliance they were trying to create. Get enough countries signed on, and then you've got an alliance with clout to change the Outer Space Treaty or bypass it. Biden administration, for those 4 years, changed the goals of the Artemis Accords to basically underline and strengthen the outer space's restrictions on private property. That was really what the Biden administration tried to do to the Artemis Accords. NASA's still pushing these Biden-era interpretations of the Artemis Accords, and I noted this in an essay on Behind the Black, and I think someone in the Trump administration, I know it's not a priority. This is mom in the future here, and they're taking care of present problems, but someone in the State Department or the Trump administration has got to take a handle on this, because we've got 54 nations signed on, and this gives us the clout now to finally maybe make some changes. And right now it's not happening, and until the Trump administration steps in and fixes this, we're going to be actually pushing communism in space in the future with the Artemis Accords, and that's got to change.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.